The paladin grinned as her death magic washed over him harmlessly, then raised his arm.
You, Forrest.
Red energy snapped out. It splashed across Desidora with no more effect than her death magic had on him, and the priestess sneered.
Pitiful.
She raised both hands now, curled them into claws.
I will find the weakness in your wards and wrench the soul from its little crystal case.
The floor around her slid to black, lined with flecks of silver, and the lamp on the wall fluttered and hissed to blue-green. The casing on it suddenly shaped like an angry gargoyle. The paladin charged her. Desidora's fingers clenched, then flared wide, and then curled as though she were trying to untangle the threads of an invisible knot. The air around her crackled, and she bared her teeth in hatred as the paladin closed. But his wards held against her magic. Grinning, the paladin took a few more steps, leaped, and caught the forearm Derry extended from around the corner right across the throat. Desidora and the area around her slid from death priestess back to normal as the paladin slid to the ground, gurgling and holding his neck. Derry stepped out from behind the corner and put the paladin down for good with a solid punch.
They aren't very smart, are they, Sister Desidora?
Powerful people don't really need to be smart.
Desidora smiled at Derry sweetly.
It is nice when you try, however.
They walked to the door, which had both a crystal plate and a key lock. Desidora frowned at it.
I cannot pick locks, Derry.
I will see what I can do, Derry said politely, and tore the door off its hinges.
Pyvik was inside, shackled and gagged, but otherwise unharmed as far as Desidora could see. Dorinki lay unconscious on a small cot against the wall. Pyvik looked up as they came inside, his eyes frantic, and began shaking his head. He pointed at Dorinki as Desidora came forward.
We'll check him, Desidora said. Let's get you ungagged first.
She loosened the gag enough for him to speak.
Watch out, he shouted,
and Desidora turned as Dorinki slammed into her. She hit the wall hard, tried to catch her breath and her balance, and felt everything slide to the simple black and white of death as instinct took over. She reached out to pluck at the fabric of the soul attacking her, and found death already there.
He has a message, said the zombie of Dorinki as its hands closed on her throat.
Its skin was pale, only barely dead, but the aura of death around it was unmistakable.
Ben Kodaristi, Kurirar.
Desidora grabbed at its aura, but it was locked or twisted somehow, and she fumbled with it like a thick-fingered girl worrying at the buttons of a new dress. Its grasp tightened, and everything started to flicker at the edge of her vision.
The same words you had, he heard first. He was forged in the death you met as a lover.
Clover, with roots intact, Derry said,
and pressed a small pouch of crushed green into the zombie's face. The zombie stumbled back, its grip on Desidora falling away as it battered feebly at Derry, who backhanded it into the wall.
Sorry, sister, I had to get the right pouch.
Not a problem,
Desidora gasped, and with her breath coming easily again, she focused on the zombie.
Forged, she muttered, and found what she'd been looking for.
She struck the air with a closed fist, and the zombie dropped like a puppet whose strings had been cut, instantly gone.
What happened? Derry asked. I thought you could control zombies.
Easily, when they are mine.
Desidora let the aura of death fade away, and the world filled with colour and life and feeling again.
And a common necromancer is simple enough. This was different.
Another death priest, a paladin, Pyvik said from where he was shackled. He calls himself Mr. Lively.
He said he was forged in death,
Desidora mused as Derry broke Pyvik's shackles open.
I believe he was a priest of Passer before he was chosen. As my power is,
she almost said, a perversion, but she had come to a better understanding of herself more recently.
An extension of my abilities as a love priestess. His power has changed the same way. It's harder for me to affect it.
That might explain why the paladins are protected against your magic, Pyvik added, rubbing his wrists.
Yes, a priest of Pesser could make powerful armor.
A death priest with the same power could create wards even I have trouble defeating.
Desidora looked over at Derry.
Also, Clover.
Derry nodded.
Part of my training in the Knights of Gedisar. Something about it being alive weakens undead. If I just punched him while he had a grip on your neck like that, he might have torn your throat out as he fell backward.
Tessadora pursed her lips. Excellent point.
What now? Pyvek asked. Locke's message said that you had something to do up here, but it didn't specify more.
No, Tessadora said. We find out where the ancients first allowed the glimmering folk into this world.
The stadium floor smelled of grass that was far greener than the normal stuff growing outside. Athletes walked on immaculately swept dirt paths that glowed faintly with the magic of Sunrise Canyon nearby. Some carried long poles, throwing weights or handball gloves. Others stretched or ran in place. Events were already running, and the crowd cheered as an athlete landed in the sand after an amazing jump, then came back to her feet smiling and waving. Her arm was bare for now. In the centre of the field, Locke saw the podium ready for the people in charge to give the speeches, backlit dramatically by the fountain of fire blossoming from a golden bowl set in the middle of the stadium.
"Tern said that from the blueprints. That's not a brazier," Kale said. "More like a pipe. Leads all the way down to the room with the gate."
"Seemed a bit much to be strictly ornamental," Locke murmured, looking up. Heaven's spire was directly overhead. "That fire turns from a fountain into a beam. It blasts up and hits the city square."
"Tern ever figure out what happens when that happens?" Kale asked.
She wasn't in a place to study on the flight up.
"Fair,"
Kale sighed.
"Hessler was a good man. We'll raise a wineskin later."
"That we will." For now, Locke headed for the fountain of fire. A matronly white woman in full robes, decorated in the same style as the atrocious uniform, stepped into their path.
"Excuse me, are you supposed to be here?" she asked.
Locke noted the white athletes walking by, talking and laughing, and pressed her lips into a thin line. Fortunately, Kale was there.
"Oh, yes, ma'am, we are. They said we were supposed to be near the podium. Last-minute addition to a speech Archvoyant Sivert is going to give when he hands out the bands. Something about diversity and how in today's republic, no matter what race we are, everybody's true colours are red and blue."
He pointed at the logo on his uniform proudly. The matronly woman blinked.
"Well, that is a wonderful message, and a really important one for everyone to be hearing. You just head over there and have a great day."
"Thank you, ma'am."
Kale smiled and ducked his head as the lady walked off. Locke started walking again. "I just threw up in my mouth a little.
I'm amazed Sivert didn't ask me to write his speeches. I've got a lot to add."
"Speaking of Sivert," Locke made a tiny gesture. As the athletes and coaches and officials began to move to the edges of the stadium, the crowds were clearing, and she could see the Archvoyant with a crowd of nobles and important people near the podium.
"Come on. Disabling the font is primary, Captain. Lesser What's-It is the one in charge, and unless he hopped bodies, he isn't on Sivert."
"He's still the Archvoyant. If anybody can get official word out to warn people, it's him." Locke gripped her walking stick and tapped a steady beat as she headed toward him.
"You have a way to stop the Paladin band?"
"Elf charm. Grabbed one after Pyvek said it worked on Drenki."
"I heard those were expensive."
"May have lifted a few things from the Dragon's Manor on my way out," Locke said, and as Kale chuckled, added, "Circle around. This works. I free Sivert and any other nobles in that crowd wearing bands. It doesn't. Get to the font." Behind the podium, off to either side of the font, a massive glamour flickered to life. At first it was a pair of black squares, blank to all appearances. Then a gigantic dragon puppet popped into view, the same image repeated on each of the great illusionary screens.
"Welcome back to the Republic Festival of Excellence," it roared,
and the fountain of fire flared brilliantly for a moment as the crowd cheered.
"We've had some amazing demonstrations by our paladins, and we can't wait to see what the rest of this great nation's citizens can do. If you'll direct your attention to the podium, we're just a few minutes away from seeing the first lucky competitor get his, or her, new paladin band."
Locke picked up her pace, her walking stick thumping faster as she hurried toward the podium. Kale headed off in his own direction, leaving her alone. She put a determined and faintly worried look on her face, and the other competitors looked at her in confusion but didn't stop her as she headed for the podium. Lockenville.
That was what Kale had said to her. Lochinvil, and that Pyvik might still be alive. Lochinvil, where Tala had died because Loch had shown up. And as for Pyvik, Loch sighed. She'd been 16 when her favourite horse had died. Her parents had asked her and Narya if they wanted to see the body. Narya had wanted to. On some level, Narya had needed to see the horse one last time to really know. Loch hadn't. She'd had her share of problems, but false hope had never been one of them, and she'd never seen the point in looking at the dead you hadn't been able to save. That was the other reason she'd never gone back to Lochinvil. Kale had tried, though. That was something. She was coming in at an angle, and Savert was talking with the nobles. He hadn't seen her yet. She kept her pace steady, nothing that was fast enough to draw attention. 10 steps away. 9. One of the nobles, chatting idly and pressing buttons on his band, saw her from the corner of his eye and frowned, puzzled, trying to place her. 8 steps. 7. 6. Loch smiled and nodded, flipping the charm from one pocket. 5 steps. 4. She was into the crowd of nobles, murmuring an excuse as she approached Savart. As she brought her hand up as though about to wave, slim fingers closed over her wrist. "Ah, Issa," said Narya. She caught Loch, plucked the elf charm from Locke's fingers and danced away. "How can I miss you if you do not stay away?" "Fool!" Princess Veiled Lightning hissed, as Icy Fist curled around the blow, his robe smoking. He spun and landed in a crouch, then parried a chop to his throat. "Her memories tell me of your skills." He dropped into a crouch, his knee checking a kick to his groin, then rolled away as a 9-ringed dragon sliced through the air, where his head had been a moment earlier. "Will you fight her now, or restrain your gifts like the foolish slave you are?" "Princess!" called a woman with armor and a big sword. "What are your arching order?"
Ulilenia, who had flapped off before the first blow had struck, landed on top of the armored woman, except that she was a bear now. The woman grunted somewhere, underneath a lot of white fur.
"Icy!"
Tern shouted, and threw a flask at Veiled Lightning's feet. It erupted into billowing smoke.
"Icy, time to go!"
She grabbed him from the smoke cloud, and he pushed her down as Veiled Lightning's blade hissed past. Then she was running, her steel-toed boots tromping as she beat a path through the tents.
"Are they behind us?"
Tern said to Icy, who kept pace beside her.
"Not at the moment, but pursuit will likely follow."
Icy leaped nimbly over a tent line.
"She was a paladin."
"I figured that by the way she talked about herself in a third person."
As they came out into an open area, Tern grabbed Icy, made a turn, and headed into a line of people.
"And this is a line for these fascinating outdoor toilets we use here in the Republic, Your Excellence," she said as they walked through the group. "It's very cultural."
They came past the line out into the open area near the cliff edge itself.
"And this is probably far enough from people that I can stop tour guiding. Did Veiled Lightning have a thing for you?"
"No, she likes girls," came Ululenia's voice. And Tern looked up to see the snowy white bird winging easily overhead. "And as a still budding flower whose silken petals have yet to..."
"And now Ululenia has made it weird with her new sex thing."
Tern jerked her head at the wooden fence marking the cliff they approached.
"How do we get down?"
"I could simply carry you," Ululenia offered.
"Decent backup plan," Tern said. "But if there are guards, maybe we lead with something sneakier than a giant eagle."
Icy frowned.
"The fence is recently constructed. Under such a tight schedule, it is natural that... there."
He pointed at a pile of leftover planks and to the coils of rope where the planks had been bound.
"Do you remember the trick I showed you, where you hook your ankle through the rope and use it to gently guide your descent?"
Tern reached into one of the many pockets of her brown crafter's dress and pulled out a pair of heavy-duty gloves.
"Let's find out."
Icy was almost as good with ropes as Kale at this point, and Tern had tied a few knots in her time. There were several long coils, and they knotted them together. The large pile of planks was heavy enough to serve as a tie-off point, and in just a minute or two, Icy was hoisting Tern and 2 very long lines of rope over the fence. It was an exercise in thinking, in problem-solving. Tern was grateful for it. It was a bright thing to keep spinning in her mind, so that the wrenching, useless grief lurking at the edge of every thought didn't have any reason to creep out of the shadows.
Right on target. Mine's below us. Couple hundred feet, I'd guess.
She looped the rope through a hook on her belt and kicked her legs over the fence. The rope dangled down below her in the distance.
Ready?
Go ahead.
If you slip, I will catch you, Ululenia added. Unless I become too depraved due to my weird sex thing.
See, it starts with the chocolate-covered apples and nobody listens.
Tern dropped down from the fence. The rope hissed as it slid through her boots and beltalk. She kicked off the glowing red wall, dropped down a bit more, and landed with her legs against the wall, the rope biting into her gloved hands as she pulled herself to a stop.
I'm good.
The rope a few feet to her left shook, and a moment later, Icy slid down beside her effortlessly, the line twining between his legs.
Did you remember how to slow your descent by hooking it through your ankle?
I think maybe my rope is made from different materials that make it not work for me,
Tern said. Icy nodded.
Of course.
Letting the rope slide through her feet and knees and gloves, Tern eased her way down one smooth and easy foot at a time. Her arms and legs began to ache after only a minute, and she sighed, and then thought about how Hessler had asked if she'd wanted him to have abs, and then pushed that damn thought out of her head for now, because crying was a good way to end up falling to her death and embarrassing herself. They were perhaps 100 feet down when Ululenia, flying in lazy circles overhead, said, "We may have a problem."
"No virgin princesses nearby?"
Tern asked. Then the rope jerked in Tern's grasp. She looked up. The scorpion and the troll were coming over the fence high above them.
"We're sorry,"
the troll said.
"Not murderer," said the scorpion. "No choice."
With one giant pincer, it began sawing at the rope from which Tern was hanging.